why your, without a shadow of a doubt, testimony is hurting your leadership. Listen in.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness. The loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.
Welcome back to the Leading LDS Podcast. My name is Kurt Frankum. I am the host of this podcast, and I appreciate all the emails that I've been getting from various people. We got one from Blake, one from Sam. You know who you are. Just sharing their thoughts and appreciation for what we're trying to do at Leading LDS. If you appreciate the value, the content that you're getting from Leading LDS, shoot me an email. Let me know what you like, what episode really stuck out to you. If we hit a home run on an episode and you think, man, that was so valuable, just shoot me an email and let me know what you really liked about it. It's always helpful. I hope you're having a good summer. I'm recording this in July of 2016, and we just got done with our stake trek. There's lots of girls' camps going on, Boy Scout camps, and I'm sure many of you are going to and from these activities as leaders, doing your best to lead and set good examples while not going too crazy with all the tasks and responsibilities at these heavy activities. And I hope you're finding time as you travel around, maybe in a car, to different meetings that you're putting in, Leading LDS, the podcast, and listening to the content here. If you don't know how to follow Leading LDS, like through a podcast catcher, a podcaster, as they say, shoot me an email and let me know. I should probably put some content together to guide people how to do that. But it makes it so easy. If you subscribe to the podcast, it's just a simple ping on your smartphone, and then you hit play and you're off and running. So it's very easy, if you set it up right, to listen to the Leading LDS podcast. Now, many of you know this, but maybe some don't, but Leading LDS isn't just a podcast. It actually started as a blog, you could say, or an online platform where I and others shared articles about leadership, perspectives about leadership, how they go about their callings and so forth. Then the podcast came later on. And so I still try and share written content. I know there's many individuals out there that would rather read an article rather than listen to it. And that's not me. I'd much rather listen to things. But so I try and put out some articles, both from guest posts and just articles from my own brain. And this episode is where I wanted to share one of those articles I've written. It's actually called Why Your Without a Shadow of a Doubt Testimony is Hurting Your Leadership. And I want to read this to you. And I guess the main commentary in this article I'm trying to get across is the culture of your war. To sit back and analyze the culture of your ward, your group, your relief society, and really ask yourself if the believer is being accepted as much as the non-believer is being accepted as much as the believer. I think it's a crucial thing to consider at this point in the church, because there is so much information out there. It's all relative, but I sometimes feel like faith crises are definitely happening more often than not, because we live in a world of information. There's so much information that you can stumble upon, and you're always asking yourself, is this true or not, or what part of it is, what part of it isn't. So that's why I wrote this article. So here's my article, Why Your Without a Shadow of a Doubt Testimony is Hurting Your Leadership. One of my favorite gospel stories is about the father who brings his possessed son unto the Savior to be healed in Mark 9. Now, after pleading with the Savior's disciples that they should cast him out, and they could not, the Savior quickly rebuked his disciples. He then turned to the Father and says, "If thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth." The Father's response has led me to hours of pondering. The Father says, "Lord, I believe. Help thou mine unbelief." In the same sentence, it seems that the Father proclaims his faith in the Savior and then has a crisis of faith. In the beginning, I can hear the conviction in his voice, stating an unwavering testimony as he says, "Lord, I believe." Then doubt snatches that conviction and turns the tone into a plead, "Help thou mine unbelief." As Latter-day Saints, we experience something similar. We have a culture that highlights those that can stand at the lecterns of the church and proclaim, "I know the church is true without a shadow of a doubt." Such conviction is inspiring. And deep within my own testimony, I probably wouldn't hesitate to use such an LDS cliche. I believe, I know, I have a witness. It doesn't matter how we testify. As we testify, we sincerely want to communicate that we have received a spiritual witness and we want others to receive that same witness. It has been decades of without a shadow of a doubt type of testimonies, or some form of them, announcing from lecterns, tearfully shared in Sunday school, or even testified in bishops' offices. However, my fear is that all these years of conviction has created a culture of gold stars on foreheads or honoring those with the right kind of testimony. That you only belong if you have received a dramatic witness and can stand with a broad chest and speak such words. The general believing membership of the church didn't intend for this. Of course, everyone sharing their testimony wants all to come into Christ. And their only intent with sharing such a bold testimony is to produce other bold testimonies. But what about the individuals who show up on Sunday with a prayer on his or her heart that says, "Lord, help thou mine unbelief"? Do they feel like they are among struggling saints seeking for sanctification? Or do they feel out of place because it seems everyone else has arrived? Now, what about the local leaders of wards, relief societies, or quorums? Of course, they have conviction of the gospel truths, and I count myself among them. They don't hand out these leadership responsibilities to the public doubter. The church needs leaders who can boldly proclaim their witness. And the last thing a leader should do is fake uncertainty of their faith in order to validate those that truly are uncertain. The doubter needs validation nonetheless. They need to know their leader not only understands their struggle to receive a testimony, but that the process of faith they are going through is normal and not a spiritual handicap. So what's a leader to do? How can the leader make room for those that are not as far down the path of conviction as other members in the ward? Invite them to share the struggle. When I was bishop, I found myself initiating the fast and testimony meeting on first Sundays of the month by sharing my own testimony. I would make it a habit to invite all to stand and share their version of their testimony, even if that testimony contained overtones of struggle and delayed certainty. It would be refreshing to hear in a testimony meeting the simple words, "I want to believe, but I'm not sure I'm there yet," or "I thought there was no room for a shadow of a doubt in my heart, but this week was tough." These testimonies may cause the bishopric to squirm or wonder if the meeting is going off the rails, but consider what it does for the skeptics in the audience. The person who stopped trying to believe long ago and now just comes to retain peace in his or her marriage. It gives them a feeling that there is a place for them at church, that others are still seeking faith as much as he or she wants to. And when the deep believer hears this struggle, they want nothing else but to love them so that they drink from the cup of sanctification as much as others do. Consider the story of Peter when he denies the Savior three times in John 18, or the story of Thomas, who is commonly known as the doubter, in John 20. When those without perfect faith realize that apostles of Christ experienced a struggle on their road to conviction, they feel validated. They feel there is a place in the plan for them. Now, it should be said that this invitation to share the struggle doesn't always have to be in fast and testimony meeting. The last thing we want for that special meeting is to be full of deep and concerning doubt. Doubt is part of the testimony process, but the spirit of doubt should not be invited. The invitation to share the struggle might need to happen in the bishop's office, reassuring the ward members that the bishop's office isn't only for ugly confessions, but is also a place to validate where they are spiritually and talk about it in a safe manner. As a bishop, I consistently made this invitation and was surprised at how many people wanted to come talk to me, but didn't make action until the invitation was made. Don't back down from conviction. Recognize some faith is struggling. The purpose of this article is not meant to call for watered-down testimonies at the lectern so that we don't hurt anybody's feelings. We need bold statements, and we need to hear the miraculous experiences that have converted our hearts because strong testimony certainly breeds strong testimony. Nevertheless, I hope leaders take a moment for each sacrament meeting and consider the silent prayers in the audience that are in the middle of a faith struggle. The simple exercise of praying over those people and recognizing the struggle exists will go a long way. You will be more likely to speak to them and help them know they have a place in the room. Share your struggle. I'll be candid. I've never experienced a faith struggle so daunting that it has caused me to question my commitment to the church. I suspect I was given the gift of faith and belief, and it has helped me build my faith maybe easier than others. That doesn't mean I haven't come across historic facts or doctrinal confusion that has caused me to pause and rebuild my faith in a new way. I'm definitely not immune to doubt, and there has definitely still been a personal struggle for me when it comes to building a testimony. So as a leader, I look for opportunities to articulate this struggle to others. Let me give you an example. When I was a bishop, I had a good man set an appointment with me. Up to this point, I assumed that he was an individual with a deep testimony of the gospel and the restored church, even though I couldn't remember a time when he had publicly shared his convictions. As this appointment got started, he assured me that this was not the case. He explained how he has never really believed Joseph Smith to be a prophet. Even during his 2-year mission, he struggled with teaching this principle. I was shocked. I know how hard a mission can be, and I couldn't imagine serving in such a way without a conviction of Joseph Smith. I was intrigued, so I allowed him to continue sharing. He went on to talk about the constant struggle it is to be at church and among his believing extended family because he didn't feel like he believed like them. I let him finish, and then I sat there, praying to know what to say, and that feeling seemed to come often during my time as bishop. I felt impressed to share with him my testimony. But I set aside the routine cliches of without a shadow of a doubt, and I did my best to explain to him why I believe using the most accurate language without hyperbole. I picked up my copy of the Book of Mormon on my desk and said, "I can't imagine the frustration you must be going through. You are here in a church that requires so much of you, and you struggle to find your faith in its principles. I'm not entirely sure how to articulate why I believe, but when I read the words in this book, it somehow speaks to my soul. For some reason, I am drawn to these scriptures daily and they buoy me up. I have yet to meet Joseph Smith, but the fruits of his labor overwhelm the consequences of his mistakes. I feel a sincere love for Joseph Smith, and no matter what some history books say about him, I can only feel good about giving him the title of true prophet. There is a distant call in my heart that is cheering me on as I make covenants, as I strive daily to keep the commandments, and as I serve my fellow men. I've never heard an audible voice or seen an angel, but I can find personal evidence that this gospel has changed me. You keep searching for truth, and I am certain your witness will come at some point. Just keep pressing forward." Now, there's definitely more I said, but the spirit of that interaction definitely changed me. He felt encouraged but not alienated. I assured him that attending our ward and striving to keep his covenants was still the best plan. And as far as I know, he continued in faith, even though he thought he was continuing in the struggle. Following the appointment, there were a handful of requests he made to me for priesthood blessings during times of trial or sickness. As I visited with him in his home, I often grinned slightly because I felt like I knew a secret he didn't know, that he actually did have a testimony and he wasn't ready to admit it. He did attend weekly until the time came for his family to move from the ward. I'm not sure what happened to him in the long run, but in that year or so in my ward, he felt like he had a place. Constantly examine the ward culture. You may be listening to this article and nodding your head in agreement. Be careful, because this agreement might create a false perception that this isn't an issue in your ward organization. Even if you are the type of leader that welcomes the doubter, doesn't mean your ward culture is just as welcoming. Organizational culture is stubborn to control. It can't be controlled by displaying a strong mission statement or publicly stating from the lectern that all sides of testimony are welcome. For culture to be controlled, it must be massaged each week into the minds of auxiliary leaders and ward members. You must remind them of it. You must view it from various perspectives by asking those you lead if they understand and feel the culture of the ward every time they attend. Maybe this type of culture is apparent in sacrament meeting, but are the doubters being alienated in Sunday school by others flexing their undoubting testimonies? Examine the ward culture weekly and make sure to adjust where needed. So what do you think? I definitely don't have this topic figured out. This is my perspective that I have formed over the years of presiding in church meetings. I'd be interested to have you comment on this post and share how you have made a place for those that doubt. And to be clear, let me summarize what I'm saying in this article and what I'm not saying. First, what am I saying? I'm saying leaders and members should strive to gain a bold conviction of the gospel and share it often. I am saying leaders should encourage members to share how they were able to receive their witness rather than simply stating their witness. I am saying leaders should find opportunities to validate concerns and doubts individuals have, even though they might be extreme or hard to believe yourself. Struggling to gain a testimony is acceptable and is sometimes easier for some and harder for others. God is no respecter of persons, as it says in Acts 10:34. So someone with a deep testimony of the gospel is not seen as a more valiant servant than someone who hasn't yet received a strong witness. What I am saying is leaders who agree with this type of approach does not mean the culture in the organization reflects that. Now, what am I not saying? I am not saying leaders should create a culture of doubt and encourage others to share why they doubt publicly. I am not saying members of the church should avoid testifying boldly. So please share your thoughts in the comment section on this post, and I'd love to get a dialogue going and hear different perspectives, because I really do feel like I have more to learn here, but wanted to share my perspective, and I hope you gain something from it. Now, before you go, I just want everybody to know that I am working on getting the Asana webinar training up live on leadinglds.com, and should be there. All you have to do is just put in your email address, subscribe to the newsletter, and we will give you access to that webinar that maybe many of you missed. And I got so much positive feedback on it, and I've even talked with a few bishops and auxiliary leaders since then who've been applying these principles and using Asana in their presidency meetings and or whatever group that they run, and they have had dramatic results. They're saving time on meetings and they're being home with their family more. I mean, it's just so fulfilling to hear that this training's helping, and so I encourage you to check it out. As always ask is $1 a month for the content of Leading LDS, and a simple way to go to give that $1 a month is go to leadinglds.com/help, H-E-L-P. At the top, there's a link you can go on and submit $1 a month. If you're looking for a great leadership product, check out the Consequence Stick. We have a lot of these. I'm mailing them out a few every week, and it would be a great thing to put in your bishop's office or in your home, and teaches a great principle with a visual aid about consequences, choice and consequences. So check that out. Until next time, be a leader and not a calling.